Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. We design, craft and install beautiful kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Just hold tight. That is the message this morning from the EU Commission spokesperson Olaf Gill to businesses on when tariffs will be in place and the timeline for a written agreement between the US and EU, setting out all of the detail that is so critically absent right now. For more on this, we're joined by Sarah Collins, Brussels correspondent at the Business Post, and Tara Connolly, an energy policy advisor with Beyond Fossil Fuels. Sarah, can I talk to you first, please, about the reaction around Europe. German Chancellor Friedrich Merz saying the agreement would substantially damage his nation's finances. French Prime Minister François Bayrou saying it was tantamount to submission. Presumably, as he plays golf, not in Turnberry, but in Aberdeenshire on his new course. Presumably, as he plays golf this morning, all of this glum, downbeat reaction is music to Donald Trump's ears.
It may be. I'm not sure it's music to the EU's ears. And I think but the reaction has been a little bit more nuanced, I think. Like the sense that I'm getting is that there's resignation, acceptance that a bad deal is better than, you know, a trade war. I think that a lot of European leaders, Merz did say that it would damage the economy, but he said it was good that we're not getting 30% tariffs. I think the Spanish Prime Minister was a bit the same. He's like, I'm supporting it reluctantly. The Finns and the Danes, similar thing. Not as good as we had it before. But I don't think there was ever any expectation that we would have had it as good as we had it before. I mean, I think that tariffs have been telegraphed for a long time, and anybody who was expecting, I don't know, that the EU would sort of get off the hook. When you look at the deals the US did recently, it's not as bad as it could have been. I mean, I was just looking at the most recent trade deal with Indonesia. They got 19% tariffs. Japan got 15%. Vietnam 20%. The Chinese actually and the US are negotiating in Sweden today to extend a pause on tariffs of over 100%. They brought them down to 10%, but only temporarily. So things are, we are sort of in a holding pattern. This deal is not yet on paper, so let's see.
When you look at the deals that Trump did in his first presidency, when he was using tariffs as leverage there, particularly with, I'm thinking of Canada, no sooner than deals were done than he started revisiting and unpicking them. So is the EU confident, or its political leaders confident, that the deal that has been struck isn't going to be renegotiated on an ongoing basis?
Yeah, it's a good question. They appear confident. I think they can only take Trump at his word for now. They say, for example, on pharmaceuticals, EU officials are saying they have a firm political commitment that pharmaceuticals will not face tariffs above 15% whenever the US concludes this investigation they have ongoing, the so-called 232 probe. We don't know when that's going to wind up, but a parallel probe on computer chips, the U.S. Commerce Secretary said it'll take about 2 weeks. So I think if you're looking for that certainty, I think in the next few weeks there might be more detail. But yeah, whether that will be unpicked in the future, I think you can never be sure with a man like Donald Trump.
Okay, let me ask you a question that doesn't require a crystal ball, because one of the immediate consequences of all of this is actually starting to be felt now, and that is the Chinese goods that were intended for the US market but that have been redirected to Europe because of the tariff levels that they would have attracted are now flooding the European market with, one would have thought, significant consequences for manufacturing industry here.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen figures on exactly how many goods are coming into the EU market. The European Commission has set up sort of alert systems, and they say for the last few months they've been monitoring what the impact would be from US tariffs on China and vice versa. So I think for the EU, the kind of strategic point here is that they want to work with the US, because what the EU is saying is, look, we're both facing the same problem. The Chinese are over-subsidizing, overproducing, and then flooding both our markets with cheap goods. The EU a little bit more kind of on the receiving end of it now because of the US tariff policy. So let's see. I mean, the EU and China actually had a summit last week, and this issue was raised. They're trying to talk to their Chinese counterparts, trying to work together with the US as well. So, yeah, it is all in flux. And as I said, I don't know exactly what the figures are. So let's see.
Okay.
A lot will depend as well on this deal that China does with the US. So we'll see what talks come out of Stockholm as well in the next few hours.
It is true to say that we aren't now in a trade war and that we aren't working with 30% tariffs, only 15% tariffs. But I noted that one of your colleagues has an interview with the former IMF chief economist Olivier Blanchard, who is saying, no, I don't think that this is a good deal. I think that Europe could have done an awful lot better in the negotiations.
Yeah, I did see Blanchard's comments. Now, he's also French, and I think the French attitude is kind of the same, no matter which politician or commentator you ask. The French were in the lead here in the last few weeks in closed-door meetings, calling for retaliation. They believe that the EU should have played what they say is a strong hand, you know, biggest trade bloc in the world, 450 million consumers. We have these new trade defence tools that we could have used. But I think that the EU was playing it very safe because countries, not least Ireland, by the way, were saying, do not do this. Germany was the same. Italy was the same. Do not antagonise. They believed the strategy was to kind of maybe play nice with Trump for a little bit, see what he was going to do first, and then only retaliate if he really went through with the 30% or something worse.
OK, Sarah, thank you very much for that. As I said, I'm also joined by Tara Connolly, an energy policy advisor with Beyond Fossil Fuels, to discuss the aspect of this deal that is supposed to see an increase to $750 billion of energy purchases by Europe from the United States. Tara, from where you're sitting, how realistic is that?
Yeah, it's completely unrealistic. It's already been described by even gas industry advisors as fantasy. You know, the first issue is that Europe isn't a company. Europe doesn't sign contracts. You know, it's companies sign contracts. So there's no mechanism to force a company to actually sign a contract to buy this energy. It will be oil and gas, of course. That's what the US exports. Last year, Europe only imported 76 billion euro worth of energy from the US. So how, you know, you can do the math on that. I mean, it would mean, you know, really going massively, getting all of our gas and US from the US.
Well,
I did do the maths on it.
We import 45% of our LNG requirements from the United States. And as you've just said, that cost 76 billion. So to go and increase that amount tenfold would be creating the most enormous LNG lake with no plans of what to do with it and no obvious use for it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, from the other side, of course, the US would have to send all of its exports to Europe because that's also far more gas and oil than the US has exported itself. And of course, these are international markets. They go to the highest bidder. They don't, you know, they can't just decide, you know, it's all going to go to Europe. But you make a good point about it being far more than what Europe actually needs. You know, Europe's gas use is actually going down in the electricity sector, replacing gas plants with renewables, wind turbines and solar panels, in buildings. We're renovating them, putting in insulation. We're replacing gas boilers with heat pumps. In industry as well, we are trying to electrify. You know, this really flies in the face of what is European energy policy, which is to get off gas and dirty, polluting, volatile fossil fuels, volatile in terms of price, and to invest in homegrown renewables and energy savings. So it completely makes no sense also from our own European perspective of what our energy policy is supposed to be.
It really is a little bit of a head scratcher, isn't it? And I note that Ursula von der Leyen, in response to Donald Trump on Sunday evening, when he said this is the biggest deal ever in the history of human civilization or whatever it was, and she confirmed it. But she could have gone on to say, but it's also just not going to happen.
No, it's not going to happen. And it's hard to understand why they signed off on this, why they said that this would happen. And even in, you know, anonymous comments from senior officials, you sort of seeing them already start to roll back and saying, you know, the deal would be contingent upon certain circumstances. I mean, the other point, of course, is around the infrastructure. You know, we don't even have enough infrastructure on the European or on the US side, or even enough ships to be able to ship all this into Europe. So it makes no sense. It's hard to understand why this was part of the deal.
If there is an increase, though, in the amount of LNG coming into Europe from the United States, what impact do you think that that's likely to have on Europe's green energy transition?
I mean, it's a good question. I mean, I think one concern is that even if this doesn't happen, or if it happens, you know, somewhat, as you say, you know, the signal it sends to the European energy sector is very bad about where it should invest. You know, at a time that we really should be accelerating and going for more renewables and more energy savings. And there's a whole load of issues we need to address around there, around getting grids built, you know, the supply chain, solving all of these issues. You know, we could see more investments in LNG terminals, which are very expensive pieces of equipment that will then lie dormant. The other issue, of course, is that US gas, LNG gas, is incredibly high carbon emissions. It is also shale gas. It's fracked gas. So you'll see effectively Europe's emissions going up at a time when they really should be rapidly coming down. So there's an issue both in terms of the compatibility with our climate targets, and also the compatibility with, you know, what we're saying to Europe's energy sector about where they should be investing.
The thing that is being said in favour of this deal by Europe's leaders is that it will help further wean us off Russian gas, which we are still consuming quite a lot of. Is there any truth to that?
I don't think so. I mean, the best way and the proven way for us to get off Russian gas as quickly as possible is in rapidly scaling up our homegrown renewables and investing in insulating our homes, because, you know, heating buildings is one of the main places we use gas, also in Ireland. You know, this is just a diversion. It's going to divert political attention. It's going to muddy the waters with investors. It's going to literally potentially take money out of investments in renewables and put them into things like LNG terminals. So I wouldn't agree with that at all. And I would say instead, this is another diversion. And it's incredibly disappointing, I have to say, to see this as part of the deal. And as I said, even if it doesn't actually happen, you know, this issue around, you know, political signals to the sector it's incredibly worrying. And just in the context of Ireland and this sort of never ending discussion around Shannon LNG, you know, that's also concerning, and it should highlight to decision makers and to the government the issues around such a project, you know, that it's hugely fraught in terms of, you know, the politics around it and the emissions around it and all of the implications. What Ireland should be doing and the rest of Europe is not building more fossil fuel taps, effectively. They should be weaning themselves off entirely. And the only way to do that is with the energy that we have in Europe, which is renewables. Okay.
Tara Connolly, Beyond Fossil Fuels, thank you very much. I'm joined now by Neil McGowan, SIPTU Manufacturing Divisional Organiser. Good morning, Neil. How worried are you about the impact on manufacturing industry of a 15% tariff?
Good morning, Philip. Yeah, the concern is still very heightened with workers in the manufacturing industry in this country. I think yesterday the most positive thing that government figures were saying about the agreement was that it brought a level of certainty. But certainly workers on the ground that I was speaking to don't see that. I think we heard the EU Commission representative on Morning Ireland this morning say that this is just the beginning of the process. So it's quite clear there's a lot more negotiations to be done. And until we see the detail on a sector by sector basis, line by line, it's going to be very difficult to make an assessment. And that level of uncertainty impacts on investment, which impacts on the jobs of today and indeed tomorrow.
One thing that is clear, though, is that the Taoiseach yesterday ruled out any Brexit-style supports for businesses. Basically, you're on your own.
Yeah, and I think that's very foolish. I think it's very disappointing. And we will certainly, in a role on the trade forum, be calling for the Taoiseach to reverse that decision. Because depending on the detail that comes from further negotiations on that sector by sector basis, it's quite clear that some sectors are going to be significantly impacted. And what we really need to be concentrating on is supporting the indigenous Irish businesses that export to the States, that are very exposed to it, and the workers that are employed in those businesses. And that should take two forms. That should take a short-term form, where a wage subsidy scheme, something similar to what we see in Germany, and we had a version of that during the COVID pandemic, that needs to be introduced to maintain the relationship between the employees and their employer and avoid layoff situations. And then in the medium to long term, supports need to be given to Indigenous Irish businesses to diversify into other markets and to reduce their exposure to the US market. And I think the short-term working scheme, maintaining that relationship between the employees and the employer, supports that medium to long-term goal of assisting these businesses to diversify.
As things stand, though, you're starting from zero in trying to gain any traction for those arguments.
Well, this has been something that has been discussed for a considerable period of time since the Liberation Day, as President Trump called it, announcements of the tariffs, and really since his election in November and when he took office in January. This is something that the worker representatives, CIPTU, the Irish Congress of Trade Unions, and indeed the business representatives are in agreement on. And that doesn't happen every day of the week. And I think when you've got IBEC and you've got the Congress unions and CIPTU in violent agreement on this. And just to be very clear, this is not about providing additional supports to large, very profitable multinationals. What we're talking about here is the Indigenous Irish businesses that support jobs in the local community. And I think the government really need to give strong consideration to both the short-term measures and the medium to long-term measures, or we will see a negative impact on working people in this country.
Neil McGowan, CIPTU, thank you very much. Let's take a break.
Get in touch on WhatsApp, 0870 32 32 32.